From the studios of their respective lounge rooms, a team of pajama-clad TV tragics ready to slice, dice, and dissect the best and worst of what's on the box. It's TV Binge Box.
Greetings and salutations, TV-loving friends, and welcome to a brand new episode of TV Binge Box. I'm Dan Bennett. Thanks so much for coming back to play with us for another week. We've loved hearing your thoughts about our first outing, so please keep them coming. We're at TV_BingeBox on the tweets, and we have another huge show for you this week, so there is no time to muck around. I will simply say we have Steve Malk, we have Joe Casamento.
Hello.
We have Stephen Brock.
Howdy.
And we have...
Clap or slap.
Yes, it's that time of the week where we run through our lists of what we've each loved and loathed this week on the telly before we hone in on one show each and decide whether it deserves a clap or a slap. First up this week, it's The Divine Joe. What have you been watching this week, Joe?
Oh, that's nice. Well, I'm still sticking with Maths, which had a little bit more excitement this week, so still onto that. Playing for Keeps, which is a bit of a sad, soapy kind of drama set in Melbourne, the AFL world, which I kind of loved and binged all 8 episodes of the last season in one night. Catherine the Great on Foxtel, pretty good. Lost Girls, which is a movie. Awful, depressing, don't do that. It's based on a true story. 100 Humans, do not go there. Please, do not go there. That's on Netflix. And, of course, the Real Housewives of Atlanta, although they are all queens, so I can call them royal. Now, the show I want to talk to you about, though, and I don't know if any of you guys have seen it, it is Tiger King Murder, Mayhem,
and
Madness.
I am so excited we're talking about this.
Oh, my God.
Is this on Netflix?
Have you seen it?
Yes.
It is on Netflix. It is 8 parts. Have you seen it all?
Oh, my God, yes.
Not a one.
Oh, my God. Okay. Yeah. Who knew so much drama in the zoo world, right?
Crazy.
Crazy. This is from the, if I hadn't seen it, I would not have believed. Sort of, it's so bizarre. It centres on this sort of insane gun-toting fanatic American from Oklahoma named Joe Exotic. Of course, he's named himself that. Who runs a zoo for, you know, hundreds of big cats in Oklahoma. You know, he feeds them 5 to 7 cows a day kind of thing. He's this crazy, larger-than-life sort of mythical character you could not create. He films his own reality shows. He has his own nightly TV show. He's got this sort of merry band of misfit workers who, you know, have no teeth and are covered in tattoos, kind of this real next-level caricatures of, you know, redneck American kind of things. And he's the king of this bizarre world. He's on late-night talk shows. Shaquille O'Neal turns up to buy a few of his tigers. He's living the dream, really. You know, he starts this tiger selfie craze at one point, which goes nuts on Tinder. I didn't know about that, by the way. I don't know if you boys do. Anyway, then he's also touring malls, and he has this kind of enemy created by this cat-loving woman who is crazy herself, right, Dan?
Very much
next
so.
Level
They're all
as
crazy.
Well. And she is part the CEO of a big cat rescue organization. She's kind of this Mother Teresa of cats. And basically it's all on. It's war, but it's real. And over the 8 episodes, you can't believe every episode what is coming out and that it's true. There's a court case, there's hitmen, there's assassins involved. Gosh. There's this tiger cub, you know, talk of a tiger cub gas chamber. There's cults, there's drug dealers. It kind of goes everywhere. There's the, you know, FBI involved. It's crazy. And there's actually a second series being made because there are so many questions unanswered. So what can I say? It's unbelievable. I will not spoil the ending, but it's still going. And it's just, you know, you cannot take your eyes off it. It is definitely one to get you through a bit of quarantine.
It sure is. So, Joe, I needn't ask, but is it a clap or a slap?
Oh, big round of applause for me for just keeping me
on. I agree with that one wholeheartedly. Brookie, what have you got for us?
Well, in these troubled times, who are we going to turn to? James Bond. There's a James Bond fest on 9 Gem for 21 days straight. And I love these films so much. They're on like at the traditional movie time of 8:30. Everyone a winner, even when they're not. This week we're up to the James Bond daddy of them all, Roger Moore.
Roger Moore, yes.
So if we're not out of here in 40 minutes, I will be gone. Next up, a UK deep state conspiracy thriller that I keep forgetting the name of, which is not a good sign.
Goodness me.
No, anyway, I am loving this one. It's called The Capture.
Sure.
From the BBC, Afghanistan war vet is captured on CCTV, which, you know, is everywhere in London now. It's a real surveillance state, enacting a horrific crime. But, of course, things are not what they seem, as the hot police detective, female, who is tasked with investigating this horrific crime by hot Afghanistan war vet, gradually finds out. I found it very topical and real, and let's Sounds hope great. It doesn't jump the shark like the bodyguard clearly did. Now, like at least one person on the panel, I love a good soapy. So I have been checking out The Heights, which is the ABC's contemporary long-form drama, aka soap, set in a Perth housing estate. They're having a good stab at it. It's a bit dull and worthy. They seem to have forgotten the crucial... You really need light and shade with soaps. You need the serious issues, and then you need the fun Mrs. Mangle-type character. Worth persevering of, I think. Only one show to watch this week. And I'll start with a bit of trivia. Last year, it was 270, and last year, it was ranked 270 in Warner Brothers' digital catalogue. This year, it has leapt to second behind only the Harry Potter series. It is Steven Soderbergh's 2011 pandemic thriller Contagion. It's got an all-cast star: Gwyneth Paltrow, Matt Damon, Kate Winslet, Jude Law, Lawrence Fishburne, Marion Cotillard. And I bring it up because I was with some friends over the weekend and we were, you know, trying to find something to watch. And of course, it leapt out and we're like, oh my goodness, we can't ignore this film, like it would seem hundreds of thousands of people have done globally. You've got to love a film that very early on kills off one of its biggest stars. And a lot of these disparate plot lines have got something for exactly this time in human history. There's anguished parents, desperate scientists, impossible ethical choices. The only thing we seem to be missing are incompetent leaders. And I tell you what, the bit where Kate Winslet as the scientist tells everyone, did you know on average a person touches their face every minute 3 to 5 times, really had me paying attention. So for me, that's a thunderous round of applause.
Yes.
Oh, good. Big old clap from Brookie. And yes, Mog, well, what have you got for us?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's me getting this minute done. Look, I am still deep in Star Trek Picard and I'm absolutely digging it. One episode to go and they've killed it. I think congratulations to CBS in this. Please, please, more. I may have been a bit harsh on The Walking Dead last week, but I will hold my tongue until the series finishes. It needs some love. The one that I want to give you as my clap or slap this week is, unsurprisingly, something that I love. I'm a huge Star Wars nerd. I'm big into The Clone Wars, which is an animated series that sets itself between episode 2 and 3 of the films. Not quite the all-star cast, but absolutely all-stars in the animators and the story writers, Dave Filoni.
Oh, it's addictive, isn't it?
So, so good. And season 7, the final season, unexpected final season that Disney Plus called for and is running right now on Disney Plus on Friday nights. They're wrapping that story beautifully, I think, to play into what would be episode 3 of the films and also to give us closure on some of those characters who never appear again. So The Clone Wars gets this hugest round of applause from me. I'm loving it. And watching TV with my son.
That's fantastic. So we have 3 from 3 with claps this week. So this is, we're all very positive and very lovely this week.
We haven't been in lockdown for long enough.
I know, right? Well, let's see if I can change the tune here. So I've been watching Neighbours on 10 Peach, which has been in really fine form with their 35th anniversary episodes. Best it's been in a long time. You can catch up on 10 Play if you've missed any of that. I'm continuing to struggle through the latest and final season of the Will and Grace reboot on Stan. It really is just an unfunny punish now, but I've sort of committed to watching all of it. And I also, Joe, watched Lost Girls. It's a tricky one. Some really great performances, but I don't know that it's the most uplifting story of all time.
No.
But the show that I want to focus on this week is Family of Suspects. This is an 8-part true crime docuseries from the Seven News team that was developed, devised and optimised for mobile phone viewing. A really interesting progression as networks are increasingly looking to streaming platforms to bring viewers new content. It's from host Denham Hitchcock with help from Seven News' Taylor Auerbach. And it's about the 2005 murder of Michael Griffey, a self-made millionaire from Melbourne, who is found brutally beaten to death in the garage of his mansion. As the name of the series suggests, nearly every one of his family members becomes a suspect over the course of time before his wife is eventually charged with a murder. But then, just a short time before she's due to go to trial, one of the daughters confesses to the crime, meaning the mother is released. However, it continues. That's where things get really interesting because there's not enough evidence to charge the daughter, despite her confession. So she's also released, and the case to this day remains unsolved. It is
what?
Yeah, an extraordinary turn of events, right? So it's streaming now on 7news.com.au and 7 Plus. And as I said, has been purpose produced for mobile phone viewing, but of course you can stream it anywhere on any device. Each episode is approximately only 10 minutes long, so it's easy to binge your way through. And it's a really fascinating watch as Hitchcock brings viewers into the investigative process. He approaches key witnesses, sifts through evidence and sheds new light on this really, truly bizarre cold case. And the ending, I have to tell you, is something that has to be seen to be believed. It is a huge DB recommends from me and another clap. So there we go. We're 4 from 4 this week.
4 from 4.
There we
Dan,
go.
Dan, I've got a quick question. When you mean optimized for mobile, do you mean in like a landscape format or in like a phone vertical format?
No, so it's shot to be watched vertically on any of your sort of, your phones and your iPads and stuff.
Oh, wow.
So
That's really smart.
Yeah, and it looks fantastic too. The cinematography is wonderful. They've done a really great job with it. So,
great.
Check that one out. All right, so that is what we have clapped. And, well, no slaps this week, just claps, which is good. So now it is time for our very next segment.
Group Binge.
All right, Brookie has the group binge for us this week. Brookie, take it away.
Thank you, Dan. Everyone was surprised by the lavish reboot of Michael Crichton's cult 1970s sci-fi movie Westworld when it launched on HBO in 2016. It seemed we'd been here before, androids at an amusement park malfunctioning and killing visitors. But critics were not expecting to rave about what they said was a dense meditation on what it means to be human. The visuals were out of this world, and the acting from Anthony Hopkins, Evan Rachel Wood, Thandie Newton, Jeffrey Wright, Ed Harris, and our very own Luke Hemsworth roundly praised. But most surprised was HBO itself, because this show pulled in the biggest ratings it had had since True Detective launched. Now, season 3 has dropped, and you can watch it on Foxtel or Foxtel Now. The androids, known as the hosts, have well and truly rebelled, and they've left the park and are out in the real world. There's a lot in here. There's rampant capitalism, and we can't help but think of the Facebooks and the Amazons of this world as giant corporations battle crazy computers and androids on the run. To what end? We shall have to wait and see. So, Dan, I want to start with you because you're, as I understand it, a newbie to Westworld and somebody who doesn't care that much for science fiction.
That is a correct assessment, Brooke.
Boo!
Yes.
Boo!
So was it hard to jump into something that was 2 series down?
Look, I think it was. So it's probably a bit hard for me to judge it on that level. But look, I've got to say, I've always heard great things about the show. And the only reason I'd never put it on, as you said, is simply because sci-fi is not my bag. But what I really found was, even though I found the narrative hard to engage in because I was coming at it cold, I found the performances really, really strong. I think sometimes sci-fi has the reputation of just being about the bells and the whistles and the effects and not so much the overall quality. But that definitely was unfair in this case. I thought Aaron Paul was especially great, and I'm a huge Thandie Newton fan. So big ticks on that side of things. And also the production values.
The first episode to the very end, past the credits?
Was that when we saw the Thandie Newton flash or sort of preview for next week where she was in Nazi?
Yeah, well, I don't think that was a preview. That was just
the
kicker.
Oh, part of the episode.
Yeah. Okay, no, good.
I did.
So you
I watched all of it. And I watched
all right,
too.
What did you think, you know, you're a TV insider. What did you think about the scripting and the production values?
Look, scripting, it's a bit hard for me to judge because it's in a world that I didn't really understand. I'm sure what they were saying made sense to anyone who did understand what was going on. But the production values were top-notch. Great CGI, great cinematography, direction, audio post-production. On, you know, on all the levels that, you know, as putting my producer's cap on, as a production, I certainly admire the high level of quality achieved. There's a lot to like about it, but for, personally for me, because I didn't engage with it narratively, because it's not my cup of tea, I probably have no desire to watch it again.
Oh, so you so you're maintaining your science fiction prejudice. Thank you.
Yeah, look, it wasn't enough to win me over for future episodes. Okay,
Joe,
sorry.
Let's move on to you, because your relationship with Westworld is a bit like your relationship to Catholicism. It's lapsed.
Oh gosh! Wow.
Okay. Touché. Good intro there, Brookie. You are right. I have a checkered relationship with Westworld. I did. So my daughter and I, my daughter's a TV addict like I am, but we like completely different things. So we tried to choose something that we would perhaps both
never
engage
ceases
with.
Never ceases to amaze me what passes for family viewing in the Casamento household.
I know. It is crazy. You have no idea. But
did you both dig it?
She likes... We neither of us did, which is weird because she usually likes head trippy things. So for me, the first season, I just had to get, and it was driving her insane and possibly meant her enjoyment levels were really plummeted because I had to keep pausing and saying, sorry, who's that? What is that, the real world, or is that? It just was too much for me. I have a degree, but you need a second degree for the show. Let me tell you. I just did not understand.
Fast forwarding to the third series, because I think
that... Fast forwarding. I've skipped the entire second season, which I believe is one that you would skip, possibly.
Jumping
from what I've
back
read.
Into series three.
But I went
then.
To the... Yes, I jumped back in. The first episode, I went to the live screening when cinemas were actually still open with Luke Hemsworth, who wasn't in the first episode, which was kind of weird. But... I didn't understand. We're in a different world. The last one, we're in the West. Now we're in the future. I was completely lost. I completely was overwhelmed. I didn't cope. And then I thought, you know what? I'm going to give it another go because we're talking about it this week. And I did the second episode on Foxtel. And I liked the beginning. I liked seeing Tandy Newton return. I liked the, and probably the romantic historian in me loved the drama of the Nazi world. But then... midway through, I got a bit confused. I'm like, who would be signing up to play a Nazi? I didn't even understand the concept. As I said, maybe it's just gone over my head. Maybe I need to just watch and not
you
think.
You are the only one. Steve, are you a Westworld fan?
Deep, deep, deep in this universe, Brookie. Like,
I'm shocked.
I was hotly anticipating... please. No, you're not. I was hotly anticipating season one when it came out and just consumed it as quickly as I could get it. Season two, I did find hard going, Joe, so I hear what you're saying about that, though I did hang in. In the middle, it was pretty crunchy. Like, it was hard to get through and this big distraction into ultimately what was Shogun World, living next door to Westworld. But it rounded out nicely and set it up without sort of being too spoilery. As you said in your intro, Brookie, the hosts escaped. They're
so Westworld is not set in Westworld anymore. Isn't that like taking Gilligan out of the island?
Yeah, but it goes back to Westworld. And that's part of the hook. I mean, we saw with Jeffrey Wright character Bernard, he goes back to Westworld in search of truth. He was the one that is responsible for creating all this with Anthony Hopkins, his character. And Evan Rachel Wood's character, not Marjorie, what's her name?
Dolores.
Damn it.
Dolores, how do I know that? You don't know that anyway. But no, what I'm saying is, can the drama still work when the fact that it's, you know, modern androids in a Wild West setting was the entire point of the show?
Yes, because it's now absolutely taken a hard pivot into that very definite question about humanity. You know, the hosts that are, you know, out in the wild seeking either revenge or to try and understand who they are, which in itself is an absurd kind of context, but introducing Aaron Paul as a real human into this and his backstory that overlays into it brings a much deeper connection. Now, I will say, without breaking sort of the walls, I've finished episode 3 on preview and about to devour episode 4. There's a lot of business that happens in episode 3 that pieces together stuff from 1 and 2 and helps set in place, I reckon, the plot for
the
Mulk, series.
That is sweet of you, but I think that's a hard sell for the remainder of our fam because they seem to have lost interest.
Although, you guys need some spine.
One of our TV binge box family, Jason Murray, was on Twitter saying that he approved of this exit from Westworld into the real world, and it was trying to get relevant with real world events. We've got supercomputers, we've got artificial intelligence.
Yep.
He thought that was a proper narrative was yet to emerge, while Darren said that he didn't think that any of these worlds were real. And I mean, this is a series that time and time again comes up with out of this world twists that can be even more baffling than the narrative problems that Joe and I have experienced in trying to work out what the heck is going on.
Yeah, well, and as we saw in episode two, where, you know, Tandy Newton is a spy in Nazi, I'm going to say France, but Nazi-occupied France, and the fact that she realizes that it's a simulation and starts to put all of that, you know, in play is one of those great twists.
Nazi-occupied France, because it's then filmed on the Warner Brothers backlot, it looked like. Just saying.
Yeah, that's right. But that it extends into what she understood to be her reality, and her reality is a simulation. So the whole thing turns out to be a great big mind bend. And that's the kind of stuff
right.
that I like.
I think you're a band of one there, Steve. My question is, has there ever been a drama with a less appealing cast of characters? Hosts or guests, and you know, who the heck are they? They all seem to have a single name, which is Charisma Bypass. There's nothing going for these people.
That's so cool.
A typical episode, there's a nihilistic city, which is a big city, or, you know, office tower or gleaming.
But we've got that.
Yeah, no, that's the typical start. And then you have a whole bunch of sweary, unlikable people who you just know 20 minutes in are going to break into some kind of ultra violence.
Check.
And I mean, look, I love violence in Game of Thrones, but at least, you know, say, Joffrey from that episode was an arsehole that I could believe in. These people are just bland, bland, bland. And has there ever...
And there's no romance.
And has there ever been a more inept cast of heavies and gunmen who, despite their supposedly crack training and outnumbering the androids 20 to 1, never seem to lay a glove on these hosts ever?
Well, see, that's straight out not true. But I don't, again, I don't want to lean too heavy in what happens in the next episode.
Oh, yeah, okay. But say one of them does die, then, hey, next episode they're just 3D printed and pop up again.
But that's the whole point. That's it. Because, and this is why I say it's kind of sets it up in episode three. It's the recognition that in this dystopian future, business is data and big data. And that's, in fact, what the Delos Corporation, which run Westworld and all of the other worlds, have made their money on. And that is what is the commodity in this future. And they recognize there's a throwaway line. Delos collected all this information before privacy laws came in, where we were just telling the internet everything.
Okay.
And that's
that
that's
is
the
an
point.
Intellectually attractive
Scary.
Concept, but as a drama, it's not blowing my socks off. So, look,
sure.
I get that this show is critically adored, but it does seem to be fast falling out of favor with the public. And it's you know, beloved by the critics, the ratings are falling. It doesn't seem to really trouble the award season too much. Although, to be fair, I should point out that it did win an Emmy once for outstanding creative hairstyling. I'm giving it 2 stars.
Boo. Well, while you're poo-pooing it, I'm going to give it a solid 4.5. I'm loving it. I think it is multi-layered. The performances from people like Jeffrey Wright, Aaron Paul, Dandy Newton, Evan Rachel Wood are sublime and very, very deep and deeply interwoven into their characters that we have learnt and understood over the past couple of seasons. I also want to give a special shout-out to Patrick Clare, former Hungry Beast alumnus, who is the man responsible for the opening titles of all 3 seasons.
Okay, they are very creepy, unsettling titles.
Yes.
They were good opening titles.
That was good to know. Okay, well, I've given it a sort of dud score. Malk's given it a very high score. We're turning the rest of the judging panel over to Joe and Dan. Is Westworld going to go through to the next round? Dan.
Look, Oh, Dan. You go, Dan. I was about to pipe
up. No pressure. Come on.
Look, Joe,
you're in the final slot. You're in the Simon Cowell slot, so you get to have the final word.
Yes.
Dan, right, sorry, I get to have the final word.
Yeah, as I said, not my kind of show. I won't be back for another round, but I did admire the production values and the performances. So for that alone, I'm giving it 3 stars.
How can you give something 3 stars if you're saying watch it again?
Because I admire, if you were into sci-fi and you would like the story, it was really well done.
Okay.
You're not really into sci-fi. That's what
Next,
we're finding out, Brooke.
Joe, mute those others.
Imposter.
Joe.
Well, I'm into romance and drama, but I will say after the second episode, if you can push yourself through it, there was a glimmer of hope for me. So I too am going to give it, 3 stars, I think. No, 2.5. I'm changing my mind. 2.5.
Is someone who's good at math, can we figure out an average? What does that work out at?
17 stars.
Basically, we've got a lot of weeks, you know, to be quarantined for. Maybe you can do 3 seasons and actually understand what's going on.
Very good point. All right, thank you, Brookie. That is an interesting chat for this week for Group Binge. Joe, what's up next week?
Yes. Well, fellas, the next one we are going to be looking at is the Netflix series Self-Made, inspired by the life of Madam C.J. Walker. Now, this one's a true story. Well, it's based on a true story, I believe, fairly loosely, about an African-American washerwoman who rises from poverty to build a beauty empire and become the first female self-made millionaire. Now, it stars two of my favourite actresses, I got to say, Octavia Spencer and Tiffany Haddish.
Haddish.
Who plays her daughter, which has been questioned actually with the age gap. But anyway, so I will be interested to see what you guys think about it. Of course, I would love, or we would all love, any listeners out there to put in their 2 Bobworth as well. You can do that. Just message us on at our Twitter handle at TV_BingeBox. And we will definitely include your comments. But I think it's going to be a pretty feel-good, kind of inspiring little number to watch.
And Joe, where might we find this potentially fine historic drama?
Netflix. It's on Netflix. It's dropped. It's in the top 10 already. So it is on Netflix.
Excellent. Look forward to watching that one. Yes, as Joe said, jump on and have a watch and then send us your thoughts. We'd love to hear from you.
Shocking celebrity secrets.
It's Justin Bieber's word against mine.
Backstage drama.
All of a sudden, Dolly Parton walks into the room.
And controversial opinions.
I'm not saying she's been approached. I'm saying this is what I'm hearing is the crunching options.
TV Black Box, the podcast where people who've worked in the TV industry spill their juiciest stories.
Julie used to like to drink on set.
TV Black Box, available in your favourite podcast feed.
We are nearly done for this week, but before we finish up, I think we're all in need of a bit of a comfort viewing for a minute, something familiar, so it's the perfect time to...
Rewind.
All right, we were going to hear from Malk this week in this week's Rewinds, but I've been diving into my archives instead to find us some comfort viewing because I think we all need a bit of it at the moment, something familiar.
Hold on. What happened to Malk?
Good.
He was so pumped last week about his little treat that he had in store for us.
And I still am.
I've taken over.
Meetings. Dan's taken over.
All right. Because we have to talk about, we could not possibly go past, one of the funniest sitcoms ever made, the perennially fabulous The Golden Girls. Bea Arthur, Rue McClanahan, Estelle Getty, and the goddess that is Betty White. A stellar ensemble, wonderful writing. Look, the continuity of the series is all over the shop. It's a bit of a hot mess. But if you can forgive that, there's nothing better than putting this show on when you need some cheering up. Very much ahead of its time in terms of a lot of the themes they explored and still holds up incredibly well today. It plays on Fox Hits every weekday afternoon at about 5:30 p.m. on Foxtel. Season 3 has just started playing out. So chuck it on and have a good laugh. If you've been holed up all day, you know, homeschooling the kids, or you're just a bit mad from self-isolation, this is a good way to unwind at the end of the day without having to dive into a big
bunker. Well, Dan, the good thing is the kids love it.
Great.
Too.
That's good to hear.
The kids, my kids are loving it too. So the good thing is you can watch it together.
Nice.
The writing was so sharp, honestly, and the performances from those 4 core cast ladies, brilliant. And given its place in time, it gave a step up to a whole bunch of, at the time, new or struggling actors. I know that Quentin Tarantino famously claims that his one spot that he had on the Golden Girls and the residuals helped him fund his first film.
Wow.
It's a great show, and I have come across it in that late afternoon slot, which is always a fantastic mood picker-upper. I would not in any way count myself as a super fan of the show, but I did once go to Sydney's Seymour Centre to watch Thank You for Being a Friend, which was a Golden Girls parody puppet show.
Oh.
They just had four people with puppets playing the four women, which was...
not a super fan, but went
as
to a puppet show.
As you do, I was going
show.
To say. That's
you can edit that bit out. Actually,
that is rather
I think
odd.
You should edit that bit out. Thank you.
No, we'll leave that bit in.
Look,
we can't give people a hug in real life, but this show is like a big warm hug. So do yourself a favour and have a watch. And also tell us what you've been rewinding to while you're stuck at home. So taking all tips on offer, we'd love to hear from you at TV_BingeBox. And with that, we are just about done. A quick note, we had previewed an interview with the fabulous Sarah Ferguson to chat about her stunning documentary series Revelation. But because episode 2 was preempted this week by the press conference with the Prime Minister, we'll be bringing you that special chat next week instead. So listen up for that. I can't wait to speak to Sarah and get some insights. I'm going to try not to fanboy too much, so I'll attempt to find some modicum of professionalism between now and then.
You've got to channel Sarah Ferguson herself.
Yes. And just for those that did miss it or went looking for it, it is going to be played 8:30 Tuesday night coming. So what's that, the 30th of March, with the third episode being pushed to next Thursday night, the 1st of April, at 8:30. Both of them on the ABC, and of course then on to ABC iView once they have aired. Sorry, Dan.
No, thank you for that reminder. Yeah, people do check it out. It is fabulous. And that chat with Sarah Ferguson next week on TV Binge Box. In the meantime, a huge thanks to Malk, Joe and Brookie. In the meantime, a huge thanks to Malk, Joe and Brookie. Drop them a line on the socials and give them some love. Where can we find you, Malk?
I'm at Steve Malk everywhere, and I'm standing right behind you.
Joe?
Creepy. At Joe Casamento 1 on Twitter and joe.casamento on Instagram.
And Brookie.
I'm at Viscount Brookie on both Twitter and Instagram, and any more modern social media platforms, I don't even know how to get into them.
No TikTok account, Brookie?
What is that? I thought it was called TikTok.
None of this? No, it's TikTok.
We'll do some dancing next week. I'm at Dan M. Bennett on the tweets. Come and say hi. Thank you to you all for listening. We hope we've been able to narrow down some viewing options for you while you've got a bunch more time indoors. We'll be back at the same time next week. Until then, we are out.